It's the amazing Rico Bronya podcast with your host.
Rico Bronya. Welcome to Rock Bottom. Welcome to another pathetic. I can't believe we're watching this. What the hell is going on? Edition of the Rico Bronya. The New York Mets get swept by the Chicago Cubs. They are now a season high 12 games under 500. And so much of this doubleheader, I actually think, is going to be memorable. You know, I think this is a lost season in which so much you're going to forget about. You'll just know they were terrible. You'll just know there was a lot of bad baseball. But these two games against the Chicago Cubs on a Wednesday afternoon in the middle of June was actually pretty freaking memorable. You've got the six-error game to wrap up the doubleheader. We'll all ask ourselves, where were you for the six-error game? Can you believe the Mets hit, hold on, let me count them, four home runs, and they still lost? And then, of course, game one of this doubleheader will be very memorable because of Nolan McClain being handed a lead, and then absolutely out of nowhere, it disappears. This was really, really bad. I think that if there's any Met fan left with hope, any Met fan left thinking, hey, there's still half a season to go, don't worry, Francisco Lindor is coming back, don't worry, this team is better than this, don't worry, there are three wild card teams, don't worry, this team has time. I think Wednesday, June 24th, was the day, was the moment where even you had to say no mas. This was beyond pathetic. I could take a thesaurus out to try to find new words to describe the ineptitude of the New York Mets. But this was just, I mean, it was awful. And I guess I start by commending you, the Met fan who went to Citi Field for either of these two games, or dare I say both of these two games, and even the Met fan that watched these two games. Because this team is begging us to shut the TV off. They're begging us to go on with our lives and think about how we can live without baseball in the middle of the summer. Because this is bad. I'll start with the second game of the doubleheader, only because I still can't believe what I watched. This is a team, defensively, that hasn't been awful, but I also don't think it's been as great as maybe the metrics will tell you. And in this game, you get Bo Bichette going back to third base. You get Francisco Lindor back for the second game of the doubleheader. Marcus Semien has not had the greatest year defensively, but you have him, former Gold Glove winner, at second base. And even though you're starting Mark Vientos at first, you actually have the infield that at the very beginning of the season, you sort of envisioned being the infield. Again, maybe not as much Vientos, but certainly Lindor and Semien and Bo Bichette. And from the very beginning of this game, and you hate to get on Lindor because he hasn't played in 2 months, but from the very beginning of this game, Saya Suzuki hits a ground ball to shortstop, and I don't know if it's the nerves or the excitement or just not playing baseball a lot over the last 2 months, but the sure-handed Francisco Lindor commits an error. And to the credit of Sean Manaea, even though he had to throw 10 more pitches, he made the error not matter. He was able to get a big out against Alex Bregman. He won a battle against Michael Bush, getting him to hit a hard ground ball right at Marcus Semien. And so despite error number one, yeah, we're going to go through all of them. Despite error number one, not a big deal. Sean Manaea is able to overcome it. Let's jump to error number two. That was in the fourth inning. Marcus Semien, who is in a massive batting slump, despite the fact that he did get a base hit in this game to break his whatever it is, 0 for 19, with his batting average dipping by the day. But tell me about how clutch he's been with runners in scoring position, or tell me how he's got less years on his contract than Brandon Nimmo. Tell me all the good things about Marcus Semien. Marcus Semien put together arguably one of the worst defensive days you'll ever see, especially from somebody who's supposed to be capable. The error in the fourth inning after the double by Nico Hoerner was like a double error. Now, he only gets blamed for one because there was only one mistake he made that led to a base runner, but he boots a grounder, has all the time in the world to throw out a slow-running catcher. He rushes it, shows zero awareness, and makes an atrocious throw. So even though it's one error, it's two mistakes by Marcus Semien. Two of them. But that's not it. That's not the only miscue you see from Marcus Semien. How about two innings later in the sixth inning when the Mets are trying to turn a double play against Matt Shaw with runners on first and third and nobody out? They're conceding a run, but they're thinking, hey, we'll get two outs and give up a run. And it wasn't an error because he was able to get an out. But let's not forget, a ball hit right at him. He knocks down. He botches. He's able to get the lead out. But that's a miscue. Then you got the pop-up. I mean, who could forget that? A little freaking pop-up with a runner on first and one out. And he can't catch it. So we've got, I just counted three defensive miscues from Marcus Semien, whose positive is supposed to be his glove. How many errors are we up to, by the way? I think I've already lost track. So we've got the Lindor error that turned out to not be a big deal because Manaea did a good job fighting through that first inning. You got the error in the fourth inning, which did turn out to be a big deal, because there's a runner on second and nobody out. He makes the play. There's a runner on third and one out. Manaea never got an out, mainly because Marcus Semien can't field a routine ground ball to second base. You had a passed ball by Francisco Alvarez, who's tough to rip because he's been great offensively in this series. You get more of that in the next edition of the Rico when we pick our Rico, I'm the man right now, or I'm the whatever right now. I guess it is the man right now. Whatever the hell you are right now. I mean, what are you right now watching this team? And then you've got the Bo Bichette error to start the eighth inning. A ground ball to third base in which he bobbles it 15 times, can't get a handle on the baseball, and in the eighth inning of a close game, of a game in which you're in it down by a run, Bo Bichette puts the leadoff man on with a defensive miscue. Then you get Vientos making a great diving stop and then making a wild flip to A.J. Minter, channeling his inner Pete Alonso, and that turns into another miscue. Then you get in the ninth inning because it couldn't stop. It was like a faucet running with these horrible defensive miscues all by the infielders. And more than just what's calculated, like I mentioned, with the Semien extra miscue and the pass ball by Alvarez. Pass ball should be errors. I said that on a previous Rico. It should be. Then you get Vientos with a runner on second and two outs. It should end the ninth inning. It should keep this as a two-run game. Not that the Mets are going to come back, but a two-run game in the ninth inning, at least you have some hope. And he boots a ground ball hit right at him. And what does that lead to? Well, it leads to Pedro Ramirez getting an RBI single and Dansby Swanson continuing to molest us with a two-run single. He has, what was it, 15 RBIs in this series? You can take the Atlanta out of Dansby Swanson, but you can't take the Dansby Swanson out of Atlanta. I think I did that backwards. Yep. Yep, I did. You can take Dansby Swanson out of the Braves, but you can't take the Braves out of Dansby Swanson, as he has done chipper Jonesian things to us all week long. But think about all of those defensive miscues. Three by Marcus Semien, two as errors. The boot by Lindor that tacked on 10 pitches to Manaea in the first inning. The boot by Bo Bichette that opened up an opportunity in the eighth inning. The bad flip by Vientos in the eighth inning, which led to more runs. And then the boot by Vientos in the ninth inning, which led to not one, not two, but three unearned runs. I know that the manager isn't the one with the glove on. I get that. We all get that. I am so sick of talking about how it's not his fault. It's nobody's fault. It's our fault, I guess. We're just the idiots who watch this team. But you heard Gary Cohen, if you watched this game, and you heard Ron Darling, they were begging for Steve Cohen to wake out of his slumber and do something. This is unacceptable. And unfortunately, it is too late. You can change the manager right now. They have buried themselves completely at 12 games under 500. They are not getting out of it. This is not May when we talked about this. Now we could spark a team. This is not the Philadelphia Phillies. But that's no longer the point. I think the point where we're at, if you are still a consumer and fan of this team, is this garbage is unacceptable. It's unacceptable. And so something has to happen. And I hate saying that because usually here on the Rico, I will give you what I would do. I give you a course of action. I rip Kodai Senga. I say, okay, here's what I would do. I rip this guy. Okay, here's what I would do. At 12 games under 500, there is no answer to fix this, but something needs to happen. Steve Cohen needs to have a press conference. And I don't know if it's apologizing to everybody. I don't know what it is, but it can't continue. Gary Cohen saying it at the end of the broadcast, like, there needs to be accountability. Taking Kodai Senga out of the rotation while a necessity is not the accountability we're talking about. Because this is now a top-to-bottom issue with everybody. The defense sucked by everybody. The starting pitching can't get through the third or fourth inning. Now, in this case, in the case of Manaea, I blame the defense. I mean, honestly, think about Manaea's performance. And I'm not really in the business of just making excuses for him. I want to be fair. In the first inning after a one-out walk, he gives up the ground ball to shortstop that Lindor boots. It tacks on 10 pitches to his pitch count, but yet Manaea is able to get through the inning despite his pitch count ballooning to 30. He gives up the back-to-back doubles in the second. Okay, that's on him to give up the first Chicago run. Gets through the third inning. He's through three innings. He's only allowed one run. It looks like despite a high pitch count, Manaea could at least keep them in the game. And then in the fourth inning, after he gives up the leadoff double, it's the Marcus Semien error. It's the weird bunt that flies over the head of Bo Bichette. Like, Sean Manaea faced not just a tad bit of bad luck, but horrific defense. Horrific defense. Sean Manaea was not as bad as some of the other crap starting pitchers we've seen over the last couple of days. Waskar Brazoban did an outstanding job. He's one of the few guys on this team that you feel very positive about as he goes out and faces six batters and strikes out four of them. But then you've got Brooks Raley, who's gone backwards. Brooks Raley got off to a great start this year. He gives up back-to-back hits. And oh, by the way, yeah, this reminds me. This is why I like going through the game. So Raley gives up the leadoff double to Pedro Ramirez ahead of the count 0-2. It's bad luck. It's a little blooper down the right field line. And then Dansby Babe Ruth Swanson hits a fly ball to right field. I do not know what Brett Beatty was trying to do. If you see the replay of this, Brett Beatty is staring at the fence. He has no idea where this baseball is, and then decides to just crash into the right field wall like he's just doing some kind of fun game of bumper cars. Like, let me bump into the wall. I see some padding. He had zero shot to make that catch. I don't blame Brett Beatty. I blame the person and the constructor of this roster that set up a scenario where Brett Beatty has to play right field, a position he's barely played this year. And that, of course, led to the RBI triple by Swanson, a run right after that when Marcus Semien can't turn a double play. So even in that sixth inning, when Chicago scored the two runs, the two eventual game-winning runs in this game, it was set up by non-errors but bad defense. So it's not just the six errors. It's the six errors plus the other miscues, the pass ball. Like, the defense was worse than just six errors. It was worse than that. I'm still pinching myself that we watched that garbage. And yeah, they offensively had opportunities. I mean, that's the story with this team. Like, their offense hasn't been awful the last couple of days, but they miss out on big opportunities. Go back to the eighth inning. You get a leadoff double from Bo Bichette, and Mark Vientos hits one that should go down the third baseline. But unlike the Mets, the Cubs make the defensive plays, and Alex Bregman makes a great diving play. But after that, here comes Marcus Semien. I'm so done with him. I'm done with him. He's got three more years left on the contract, but I am done with him. He's hitting .219. His defense has now sucked. I thought for a while it was okay, but a game like this, I mean, overall, he's been disappointing compared to what we thought he would be. I probably gave a different answer to that a month ago, and I got to hear Ron Darling and Gary Cohen saying, well, maybe he's playing too much. Maybe they should give him an off day. An off day? How about an off week? He's old. He's washed up. He's not good. And the only reason he's here is because the Mets deem the contract they traded so far worse than Marcus Semien that they gladly took this back. And here's the problem when you trade bad contracts. Here's the problem when you trade somebody who at least did something for you for a guy who's a story about what he did in the World Series a couple of years ago, or a story about what he did in Toronto. This man means nothing to us. He doesn't get the benefit of the doubt. And that's what's so difficult as a fan when you watch guys like Marcus Semien, who, yes, has a resume. Yes, I respect him. But that whole resume wasn't done here. So I'm sorry, you're making us sit through 219. You're making us sit through 15 miscues defensively. Now, should he play every day? Of course he shouldn't play every day. We've been talking about that since April. Why is Marcus Semien being treated like Cal Ripken Jr.? Why? There are other options. And you can't tell me the options are worse. Because even though Brett Baty sucks, trust me, I'm not enamored with Brett Baty anymore. None of us are. And his wonderful .217 batting average. It's not like Marcus Semien is so much better than him. So yes, there should be days in which Semien is on the bench. But he comes up with a runner on third base and less than two outs in a two-run game in the bottom of the eighth inning, and he can't even drive that run in. Drive that run in, get it back to a one-run game. Instead, he pops up to Nico Hoerner in short right center field. This is your at-bat, your moment to erase how god-awful your defense has been, and you hit a weak-ass pop-up to second base. Francisco Alvarez struck out, but again, he also hit a home run earlier, hit a home run in the first game of the doubleheader, hit a home run the game before that. It's tough to kill him too much. But even in the seventh inning, you get the one-out double by A.J. Ewing. This is when they were down by a run. Mendy uses Torrens to pinch hit for Baty, which I have zero issue with at this point. He draws a walk, and Carson Bench can't come through, and Francisco Lindor can't come through. There's no surprise about Lindor. Like, I get why he was activated. I'm glad he was activated. You know, it's Lindor over Zach Short. It's Lindor over whichever bat you were going to have play. MJ Melendez, Brett Baty, Mark Vientos, take your pick. But it is not a surprise that Lindor has come back. And in his first game, he took a very nice, quiet 0-for-5. And that may continue for a while. He's barely played baseball this year. Doesn't mean I wouldn't activate him. He is still a better option than some of their other possibilities. But anybody surprised that Lindor's first game was met quietly with an 0-for-5? And met with a miscue in the first inning? You can't be surprised. But top to bottom, game two of this doubleheader was a disgrace. Gary Cohn even threw in that stat at the very end that this season no team has out-homered their opponent by three or more and then lost. And in this game, the Mets hit not one, not two, not three, four home runs. The Cubs did not hit any, and the Mets got blown out. That reminds me of a Jet stat. That's very Jet-like. Reminds me of a game, and I can't remember who the opponent was, but there was a Jet game in which they won the turnover battle by about four, and they still got blown out. And I remember Beningo and I just could not, like, how does this happen? And the answer was, how does it happen? They're the Jets. That's how it happens. So let the answer be the same. How do you make six errors in a game? How do you hit four home runs, your opponent hits zero, and you still get blown out? The Mets. The 2026 New York Mets. And there are seasons in which if I just say 2010 New York Mets, you probably have no emotion. But there are certain seasons that when you hear it, you're like, ooh. And this team is the 1992 Mets. They are the worst team money could buy. And believe it or not, and we're going to start to do this on the Rico because why the hell not? They are actually, I think, behind the pace of the 1992 Mets. Like the 1992 Mets hung in there for a while. Now, granted, there weren't any wild card teams, so hanging in there record-wise wasn't keeping you close to a playoff spot, but they were hanging around 500. This team is now 12 games under 500. Let me think if there's anything else to say about game two of this doubleheader. Bo Bichette hit a home run. That's fantastic. Lindor looked like crap. Carson Bench had a rough game. Marcus Semien sucks. He starts Eric Wagaman at DH, who has a very quiet 1-for-3. A.J. Ewing had a really good game. Hits that two-run home run in the second. Hits that double in the seventh inning. Brett Beatty is a waste of space. Waskar Brazoban, awesome. Luke Weaver, awesome. A.J. Minter, bad luck. And Brooks Raley, not good. And that has been a common trend for him. Devin Williams, what could I say? There's two outs and nobody on. He gives up a double to Nico Horner. And then the inning is over, but Mark Bientos boots a ball. Then he gives up a bloop hit. So nothing really to say about Devin Williams. He was just victim to this garbage defense. What do I say about Sean Manaea? Even though three-plus innings, six hits, four runs isn't great, he still elicits more confidence in me than I would have in David Peterson or Kodai Senga, who luckily is out of the rotation. But they needed to win this game. And the reason they needed to win this game is in game one of the doubleheader, we were hit with another creative way to lose. The offense misses many opportunities against Javier Assad. Nolan McClain escapes some jams, including a leadoff double in the second inning, and for the most part is pitching really well going into the fifth inning. Mets give him some offense in the fourth. Jared Young hits a two-run opposite field home run. Alvarez hits a bomb. The Mets are up 3-0. There's two outs and nobody on in the fifth inning. Are you not, in this moment, thinking, okay, I'm not printing playoff tickets quite yet, but all right, I feel okay. McClain is turning his season back around again. He's not dominant, but okay. I'm seeing some positives out of McClain, and I have a 3-0 lead. And out of absolute nowhere, you get an 0-2 base hit by Pecro Armstrong, an RBI double by Michael Conforto the other way, and then a pitch later, a Michael Bush two-run bomb, and it goes from 3-0 Mets. McClain is in full control with back-to-back strikeouts and an 0-2 count on PCA into after just four pitches, or I think it was, four pitches. Single, double, home run, tie game, how you feeling? That was a stunner. Despite McClain having a very up-and-down rookie season, it feels like a sophomore year, but technically it's a rookie year. That came out of nowhere. And you know what Nolan McClain reminds me of? I'll go back into the 90s again. I apologize for the younger Rico audience. This reminds me of 1996 Jason Isringhausen. In 1995, Jason Isringhausen came up in the middle of the summer, made his major league debut at Wrigley Field, pitched great that day, and pitched really well over the course of 1995. 1996 comes, now there's a lot of hype. We've gotten our glimpse of Izzy, Can't wait to see him. And what seemed to do in Jason Isringhausen a lot was that there'd be two outs, there'd be two strikes on hitters, and you'd have a very difficult time putting them away. And it feels like that's what we're encountering with Nolan McClain. So he gives up the two-run home run, gets the last out of the fifth inning. The Met offense with the top of the order, I thought this was huge. Top of the order of the fifth inning, right after you gave up the three runs and Benge and Ewing and Bacheco down 1-2-3 on five pitches against the immortal Javier Assad. But you get to the sixth, and I thought this was fascinating how Carlos Mendoza handled it. McClain gets the leadoff man out, again, ahead of the count, gives up a double to Nico Horner, who is a doubles machine in this doubleheader. Gets Pedro Ramirez to line out, two outs, tie game, runner on second, and you're facing Miguel Amaya. And McClain is battling him. His pitch count at this point is now in the 90s. And Amaya hits one into the hole at shortstop. And unfortunately, there's really nothing Bo Bichette can do with it. And it's an infield hit. And this was the moment of truth. The pitch count is 99. McClain had struck out Dansby Swanson twice already. You've got Brazoban warming up. What do you do? I was very conflicted. You've got Brazoban ready. Just go to Oscar Brazoban. But I didn't hate challenging Nolan McClain. I didn't hate it. I didn't hate letting him try to get Swanson for a third time, who he struck out in his first two at-bats. I didn't hate it. The only concern you have, and this is where it's about feel for your players, is do you think that Miguel Amaya's infield hit took enough out of Nolan McClain emotionally that you're better off going to a reliever and getting him out of the game? But I admit, as much as Carlos Mendoza needs to be fired from this job for the, I think I'm up to 22 times now that they should make a managerial change. I've been right every time. They just haven't done it. I agreed with at least letting Nolan McClain get this last out. And I did treat it like, all right, this is the last hitter you're going to face. And he gives up a three-run home run to Dansby Swanson. I laugh because it's like, you got to be kidding me. You got to be effing with me. And so it ruins McClain's performance. It turns into a six-inning, six-run performance. His ERA is above four, and he failed the test. I didn't mind giving him the test, but he failed it. And you knew right there, holy crap, they're going to lose this game. What's funny, though, is in the bottom of the sixth inning, right after Swanson hits the home run, they get a really good at-bat from Vientos, who draws a walk as a pinch hitter, a base hit from Alvarez, and there's two on and nobody out. And it's like, all right, it's only the sixth inning. Could this offense respond? Nah. Eric Wagaman bounces into a double play. Mr. Clutch Marcus Semien flies out to right field. And after that, the LD bats took over. There would be no comeback on Wednesday afternoon at Citi Field, but there would be a Dansby Swanson grand slam off Jonathan Pintaro just for shits and giggles. Just because why not? Why not make this thing uglier than it already is? Why not tack on a few more ribeye steaks for Dansby Swanson? What a joke. What a joke. And I am pissed at the offense because it's 6-3 in the sixth inning in the Chicago bullpen. They did nothing. Two base hits. Other than that rally in the sixth inning, they did nada. A two-out hit by Benj in the seventh that went nowhere. They went down 1-2-3 in the eighth against Tyler Ferguson. 1-2-3 in the ninth inning, and it's curtains. And this team loses. And what a tone setter for this disastrous doubleheader. This is a doubleheader you'll remember. I wrote it down on my worst losses of the year chart. I'm putting them together because I think these two losses go together beautifully. The Nolan McClain implosion and the offense saying, ah, we're done. Followed by the six-error defensive masterclass they put together in the second game of this doubleheader to lose three straight to Chicago, five straight overall. They're 0-6 against the Cubs. I give you this, though. Remember There was one other year that jumps out at me where the Mets did not beat the Cubs in the regular season, and that was 2015. So now all we got to do is figure out a way to get to 90 wins, make the playoffs, face the Cubs again, and we're in business. Yeah, we're in business. But at 12 games under 500 and five consecutive losses in a rotation that just, I mean, it's awful top to bottom. Even the guys you were supposed to trust, like Nolan McLean and Freddie Peralta, cannot be trusted. We are unfortunately in a similar position and a similar question to one I asked recently, which is, what is this team good at? And the answer is nothing. I think the fans were the most entertaining part of this doubleheader. You had the Norwegians during the first game of the doubleheader doing chants the entire game. And then in the second game of this doubleheader, and I do not blame the Met fans for doing this, they were so disgusted by what was happening on the field and didn't know what to chant. Like, there's no obvious chant. You really want to chant Fire Mendy? Do you want to chant Fire Stearns? You're not chanting sell the team. So I think the Met fans took the right approach, which is, all right, you don't want us to be negative. You don't want us to talk about firing people. That's such a not a nice thing to do. Okay, we'll chant for Pete Alonso because you decided to not make him an offer. And because of that, we watch Jared Young play first base every day and Mark Vientos play first base every day. And I have tried the hardest I have to not continue to bring up the disagreements I have from the offseason. But I only bring it up because the fans had no other choice. What do you want them to chant? What do you want them to say? Steve Cohen more than David Stearns. Because, look, I don't like David Stearns' answers. I've listened to all his press conferences as much as I don't want to. I don't like his answers. He isn't taking blame. It doesn't feel that way, at least. He's at least out there. Where is the owner? What does the owner have to say to his consumers who are pissed off? Like, give us something. And I don't even know what the something is. I don't even know what I'm looking for. But right now we are watching this every day and we're all completely disgusted. Hopefully Juan Soto comes back because God knows we don't need dopey conspiracies about how Soto and Lindor just won't play together because they don't like each other. They need Soto back and they need Lindor to figure this thing out quickly. And I could list other things they need, but I feel stupid talking about it because none of it's going to happen. They're not good. So I'll regroup. And when we do our series-ending Rico Bronya sometime late Thursday night on YouTube or early Friday morning, if you download the Rico, I will try to get rational again and give you balanced thoughts about what to do next and where this season is going. But right now, off this embarrassing doubleheader in which the defense was atrocious, I mean, there's nothing rational one can say. This has been disgraceful. This continues to be disgraceful. And I warn these players, and I warn David Stearns and Carlos Mendoza and Steve Cohen, the scene at Citi Field is going to get uglier because you're going to see two things that are not good. You're going to see a lot of empty seats, but for those that are there, you're going to hear stuff like Pete Alonso chants, and you will probably eventually get fire Stearns, fire Mendy, fire whomever. Because as fans, what can we do? What can we do? Horrible. Disgusting. But hey, that's the 2026 New York Mets. Thank you for listening to this special We Suck edition of the Rico Bronya. Make sure you subscribe because like an episode such as this, you never know when we'll pop up with one. So subscribe to the Rico Bronya or the WFAN YouTube page. We will have our series recap Rico Bronya at some point late Thursday night because I'm going to Thursday's game. And I am going with not only my family, but for the very first time, I never did this with my beloved Dudley when he was around. I am taking my dog to Citi Field. I am finally engaging in Bark in the Park. because I'm an idiot and I'm a glutton for punishment. Thank you very much for listening to another depressing edition of Rico Bronya.
We hope you enjoyed this episode of the Rico Bronya podcast. It's amazing, isn't it? Make sure you download it now to keep it on you at all times.